This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonatoni with you. We are coast to coast as always. Michael's out there at his office in Jersey. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Lots to get to over the course of the next 2 hours. And speaking of Circa, media days underway for the Mountain West Conference here. We have Big 12 media days that's going on out at Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders play. So lots of college football in addition to plenty of NFL today. Michael, I am so excited for today's show. We joke so much about it being the dog days of summer, but we've actually had a lot to talk about, which has been fun.
It's been great, and thank God for Hard Knocks. Yes. I mean, what a great idea it was to really to have this. I mean, the off season is as important as the in season, and I think you learn way more about teams, about what they're doing, what their thought process are, all those things from the off season than you do sitting there in August wondering who's, you know, we know the players that are going to get cut, wondering who's going to get cut and who's not. I think this has been really good for fans to get the peek in beside, inside the whole combine and the whole team building element.
Hard Knocks, and also, by the way, for Inquiring Minds, later on today, Netflix is having the debut of that wide receiver series. How last year it was quarterback, this year it's wide receiver, following Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, Debo Samuel, a handful of guys. So that'll be another interesting layer that we can get into a little bit. But let's start right there with Hard Knocks and the New York Giants. We had episode 2 yesterday where it was very combine heavy. We got a glimpse into those NFL speed dating interviews that they have, which they did a lot of work on quarterbacks, which was interesting. We also got a little bit more detailed in how conversations ultimately went with former running back Saquon Barkley. There was a phone call between he and Joe Shane. You see Shane's conversation with his agent, Ed Berry, as well. As you were kind of unpacking a lot of the discussion around Saquon and his contract, what did you take away most?
Well, I could tell from the conversation that the agent wasn't disappointed. Like, to me, and again, I have more expertise in this than most people do. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying I've been on the other end of that call. I could tell that the agent had something else. Like, if I were Joe Shane, I would have hung up the phone and saying they got to deal with somebody. Now, because he took the news, there was no pushback. Mm-hmm. It was like acceptable, you know, and that's what agents do. They have all the answers. They play the card. And I think he knew that he had a deal, whether it was Philadelphia or Houston. Look, you're back from the combine. A lot of stuff happens at the combine that's not supposed to happen at the combine in terms of conversation. So he knew what deal he was going to get. And Shane just, to me, looked like he was oblivious of it. I don't think this has been a very good portrait of the Giant front office in terms of anticipation, in terms of understanding market value, in terms of how do you justify what they did last year compared to this year, right? Last year, we had to have Barkley. This nonsense about, oh, we don't want to franchise him, make him unhappy. Who cares? Your job is to make the franchise good. I don't care about making him unhappy. Hell, and he even admitted in the thing, he said, look, I offered him a lot of money. He turned it down. Mm-hmm. Well, what would have happened if he took the money? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand. There's no, now look, I know it's not a press conference, but like in Joe Shane's mind, like last year you offered him a lot of money. The cap went up significantly. And now all of a sudden he's too expensive and you're down to $7.5 million on an offer sheet. Like, do you really know what the market is out there? Did you listen to anybody talk out there at the combine?
Yeah. And you wonder, right?
It's bizarre world for me. And I know I sound like, oh, Lombardi, you just, you know, you wanted to. No, I mean, like, to me, if I were anybody at the Giant organization, I think that there's no leadership. There's nothing there that tells me we got this thing figured out. We know what we're doing.
So let's listen to a little bit of the sound from the show yesterday. After Joe Shane hangs up the phone with Ed Berry, first thing he does is call up Saquon and let him know he's going to test the market.
I think just mulling over this, the right thing to do is let you test the market and see what your value is. I don't want to do the franchise thing or all that stuff again. I don't want to go through that. We've both been through that. You know, if you really want to be a Giant for life and you're interested in staying here and coming back, just see what your market is and then have Ed come back to us and we'll see if we can we can come to an agreement.
All right, I appreciate that.
Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Can you give me your word on that, or are you not going to give us a chance?
What do you mean? Like circling back?
Yeah.
I mean, I already told you where I want to be, so.
Okay.
Seem very disinterested there. You can tell, like, there's going to be no love lost in this relationship whatsoever. And then also, Michael, you think about the tease for episode 3, which I have heard apparently episode 3 is going to be like where the fireworks are. It's going to be the best episode of this 5-part series. So I'm very much so looking forward to it. But in the tease, you hear Joe Shane on the phone say, I offered him today $12.5 million average annual value, $25 million guaranteed. Ultimately, what does he sign with the Eagles for? $12.5 million average annual value, $26 million guaranteed. Both were going to be 3-year deals. So he signs with the Eagles for just $1 million more than what the offer was from the Giants in guaranteed money, which I'm curious to see how that conversation ultimately goes in the negotiation, how much of it they show. Was that the final offer? Was there more? But clearly the Giant for life thing didn't matter that much to Saquon.
Well, I mean, that never matters. I mean, that's all just rhetoric. That's all for the media. It's never about that. Nothing says I'm sorry more than money. And so it's just, you know, that as a general manager that, you know, I want to be a Giant for life. How many guys have said that and have left town? I mean, come on. That I'm not faulting them for it. It's a business. This is what we're in. There's not like, you're not going to get a varsity jacket because you stayed. You know, it's just not high school. This is a business. And to me, you know, if you wanted to keep Barkley and you were prepared to offer him $12 million and you do it that late in the process, you're not going to win any favor because he feels disrespected, right? He feels like he's not getting his true market value. And somebody else has been recruiting him.
Yep.
Somebody else has been recruiting him, and you know that. I mean, and so to me, it's a complete mischaracterization of the market. And I think when he hung up that phone with Barry, he should have called John Mara up on the phone and said, look, I think this guy's got a deal. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a deal. The way he behaved on the phone, part of your job as a general manager is to interpret what happened on the conversation. It's never going to be straightforward. It's never going to be linear. You've got to figure out, you're playing poker here, right? You got to figure out what hand he has, right? You got to figure if he's going to spray the pot. You got to figure if he's going all in. You got to know what the market is. They acted like they had no idea Philly was involved. I mean, they're sitting there saying 7.5. Who's going to pay them? Like, they're just lying to themselves. I think it's a bad look for the Giants. And, you know, I think that they should have been more proactive on it. Look, to me, I don't understand the disconnect between last year when we had to have them to this year. Daniel Jones got hurt. If there's one thing that matters, it's Saquon. He stayed healthy. You should have gone to Daniel Jones and said, hey, Daniel, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take some of your money, and we're going to lower your base because we can give it back to you in incentives easily. So you pay for Saquon. So let's just say that, okay? Let's just say that's what they did, Stormy. They go to Daniel Jones and say, Daniel, look, it's going to cost us $12 million to sign Saquon. We know you need him on the team. You lower your base salary from 35 down to 23. And if you're active for all 12 games, we'll give it to you in the back in incentives. Boom, done. Well, I can't do that. You can't do that? You don't want to be, you know, you got to help your team out. Mm-hmm. We'll give it back to you. All you have to do is be active for all the games. You just got to dress. Once you're active for 12 games, it's not likely to be earned. We got it. Why wasn't somebody thinking about that? Like, why didn't we go after Daniel Jones and lower his salary? Like, all of a sudden, we're treating him like he's won 8 Super Bowls over here. And he's coming off an injury.
And Michael,
like,
that's
who's thinking in this building.
Michael, that's why we had that conversation at that time and didn't understand how that wasn't the conversation in the building. Meanwhile, Saquon now goes to the Eagles, where he is an awesome offseason acquisition for that team. He's the 6th shortest shot on offensive player of the year at 16-1 odds. But you look at the Daniel Jones of it all, which is so significant. And the comments from Joe Shane in the previous episode where he said, we're not paying Daniel Jones $40 million to hand it off to a $12 million running back, right? But also that question of protecting themselves from Daniel Jones in the same breath, it felt like, because he is a guy that's had 3 serious injuries in a short amount of time. He had limited action last year, coming off of a torn ACL. And so with that, obviously, the Giants were considering quarterbacks this coming season. And in the combine, they addressed that a little bit. You heard Joe Shane go over to Elliott Wolf and ask him, hey, if you're thinking about moving off of 3, would you have us in mind? Take a listen.
What do you, if you, if, just do this for me. If you guys are going to do anything at three, like move out at all. Again, I don't, you don't got to tell me your plan or anything. But if you have any inkling, just call me.
We've had a couple of teams call, and it's kind of been this conversation.
Yeah.
Going to Oxford. Were you guys six?
We're six. Yeah. And
that's a good spot.
May not be till draft day. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows how it's, but if you just keep me in the back of your mind, just.
Sure.
And we can talk about this more coming up, Michael, but it obviously where there was smoke, there was fire with this conversation. The Giants did a lot of work on quarterbacks, it looked like.
Well, yeah, there was, for all the talk about trading up for Joe Alt, there was no mention of it.
Correct.
I didn't see them interview Joe Alt. I only saw them interview the quarterback. Let's go back to the ridiculous statement. We're not paying Daniel Jones $40 million to hand it off. Okay. All right. They're paying Lamar Jackson $52 million to hand it off to $12 million to Derrick Henry. How does that make sense? Like, how does this make, like, you know what it shows me? Like, I feel like I'm watching a bunch of fans talking about the game. Like, I keep thinking, what would Al Davis be saying to these people in this room? And he would have killed them. I mean, are you kidding me? They start talking about drafting the player before they go through the process. They don't have any idea about team building. They just let the guy walk out the door. They had no idea that a team down the street was going to sign him. And then they use this we're not paying them to hand it off. Well, what's Baltimore doing? What do you think they're doing? Derrick Henry just signed. What do you think Green Bay's doing?
For all of the negatives about the way that the Giants and Joe Shane handled the situation with Saquon and Daniel Jones, there was a lot of interesting fun stuff to take away from yesterday, which I do want to make sure we touch on.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than a month, and lucky for you, our VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get instant access to comprehensive team profiles with power ratings and win total projections, proven betting systems and trends like how to win with our betting splits, plus top picks for season win totals, futures, props, and awards like MVP and Rookie of the Year. To access this guide, you do need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we're offering a great deal. Instead of our usual $240 price, just $199. And as a special bonus, we're adding in an extra month for free when you use our promo code Lombardi. That's 13 months of access to everything VSiN has to offer. That includes the daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, and so much more. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe today. Use that promo code Lombardi to get the discount and the extra month. That's VSIN.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the program. Before we had to hit the commercial break, we were talking all things episode 2 of Giants Hard Knocks, and I wanted to dive in a little bit more into the combine interview portion of this. We played the sound from General Manager Joe Shane going and having a brief discussion with Elliot Wolf, who was handling all of the personnel decisions at the time for the Patriots, who were picking at 3, and it sounded like that was something they were interested in. He was planting the seed, hey, let me know if you decide to move off of that number, we could be interested. And obviously this is a Giants team that has questions at quarterback, and we're doing their homework on all of those top guys. Michael, can you hear us okay?
I'm sorry. I thought we were playing a video there. I thought we were going to play the video.
No, I think
there's no question they were doing their homework. No, I thought there was no question they were doing the homework. And I think that they, the way they interviewed that in terms of trying to get it to repeat, the way Daboll came back and said, what was that play call again to Jaden Daniels?
Yep.
I think is exactly what transpires inside those meetings. I mean, they had a lot of people in those meetings. I swear, I thought they were at the Copacabana. I thought they're going to need Henry Hill to come down and bring a table to get in front there. There was so many. I've never seen that many people. You want to make a bad decision and ask a lot of people, but they had them all in the room. I guess they all feel like they need to be a part of those conversations, make it feel for the player. But, yeah, I think they definitely were doing their homework. I thought Drake May was really impressive. I thought Jaden Daniels, was good. I think he could have been better, but I'm sure he wasn't as used. I was impressed with Caleb Williams' poise. Mm-hmm. I thought he was very good in there. And, I think it's hard in 15 minutes to form a really quick opinion on a player. I think that's why you have to go spend more time with him.
No question about it, but I agree. In the brief glimpse that we got to see with Drake May, It seemed like the guys in the room were a little bit infatuated with him. And we talked so much leading up to the draft about, you know, how Brian Daboll had so much success with a guy like Josh Allen and the commonalities between Josh Allen and Drake May. And some people had called May Josh Allen 2.0, and maybe this could be a match. And obviously that's who the Patriots ultimately end up taking with that number three overall pick. But there were a couple moments where you could just, you could see, okay, the cerebral intelligence is there. Like, that made me get excited for May and his potential if he does get to sit for a while like we expect in New England and have that opportunity to grow and develop, because the mind seems to be there.
No question. He had a good feel for it, and, you know, he had a good memory of it, and that's what they're trying to do. What Daboll said to a lot of them was, we would just make that one word. That's the way it was in New England. They would call Barkley, and they knew the play, and so they try to make it easier for the quarterback. I thought the other thing that was interesting is they dabbled in the Christian Wilkins decision, which I would have gone down that road as opposed to giving up a draft pick. I know Brian Burns is a good outside rusher. You know, a lot of the clips you see of him, he's unblocked. I think Brian, he had 8.5 sacks last year. I'm not saying he's not a good player. I think he'll benefit from having Dexter Lawrence. But if you had Dexter Lawrence and Christian Wilkins inside to go along with anybody else you put on the outside, I think that could really work. I would rather have a tackle, defensive tackle, than an edge rusher, and because I think it would help their run defense tremendously. But they'd made that decision to go in the other direction. I would have signed Wilkins and not given up the picks. I mean, I thought – they negotiated against themselves. I don't know who else was competing for Burns for a 2 and a 5.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that ultimately comes down to, yes, Brian Burns is very talented, and you could hear the way that the staff talked about him when that was presented as an option. They were excited about his skill set, but also the relationship that you have between Joe Shane and Dan Morgan, if potentially that played into them ultimately getting a deal done more, who knows. Also, another thing that came through from those combine interviews was the sit-down with Malik Nabers, who they ultimately ended up taking at 6, as well as Rome Odunze, who I think showed very well in the program.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Rome Odunze was really impressive. You could see why teams liked him in terms of his character, what he brings to the table. Nabers, I think Nabers is exactly kind of what I thought he was, a very talented athlete that I think they're going to line him up at the X position and let him just go and work from there. I find it interesting that they spent all the time in the first episode talking about how we got to protect Daniel Jones better, but they didn't draft any receiver, any offensive lineman in this draft. I mean, they talk about it, but they don't draft them. Now, I know they signed Runyon. I know they signed Jerome Illuminor. I know they did that, but that doesn't make you a better team. I mean, those are good, if not, you know, they're a little bit of improvement. So I thought that was interesting. I thought we would see a Joe Alt interview since that's who they told us they were trying to trade up to get.
That was the rumor. Who knows? Maybe we'll see a little bit more if they, like, from a workout standpoint, conversation standpoint, as we go on. But yes, that was interesting because that was talked about so much. But then they just show us going through the top quarterbacks in this year's class. With Nabers, I did think it was funny in their meeting when he was asking about, okay, how do you feel if you don't get involved early enough in a game, or what's your competitive level? And he was talking about how much he hates to lose, how it's tough for him not to be involved early. And then you had the moment with Daboll where he was kind of like, yeah, me too. I go through that. And Joe Shane messing with him a little bit. I thought Daboll came off very well in this episode. And for as much as I feel like I've been, and it's not that I'm a Giants hater, okay? I don't want to throw that out there. I just specifically do not think that Daniel
Jones.
That's
me. I'm the Giant hater, right? That's what everybody says. I'm the Giant hater.
You can be the president of that club on Twitter. For me, I just have specific issues with Daniel Jones being the franchise guy. That is just ultimately my big problem with the Giants. But when I wanted to root for Daboll, though. He had some great moments in this, being personable, showing that some of his relationships with the new staff were going well. He made the joke when they were going through the 40-yard dashes that, hey, if you put a plate of wings at the end, I could probably get there in 7 seconds. Like, those were good moments for him, I felt like.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I thought he was, you know, in the way he interviewed him and the way he kind of tried to develop the rapport with him, I thought he was very good, you know, and I would have bet against him at the 7 flat. There's no question about that. I think he would have done that. But, you know, I mean, Brian's always kind of thought he could play a little bit better than he could.
Hey, Michael, we'll how fast could your 40 be today if you were going?
I don't think I'd break 7.0. I mean, even if I was chasing Sienna down the beach, I'd be like exhausted. Remember, the 40-yard dash is more of a conditioning test than it is a speed test. You know, you got to be in good shape to run a fast time in that. I don't think me or Brian are in very good shape to do that right now.
Michael, that's especially me, I've got a knee injury. I'm already slow. We don't need to throw that out into the ether, but I thought it was fun overall. We are also going to talk a lot of college football today. And yesterday, there was a comment from Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy that went viral, unfortunately, for a lot of the wrong reasons. And it was, you know, he made the reveal that Ollie Gordon, who was arrested under suspicion of DUI very recently, was going to play. He wasn't going to get suspended, miss any time. And as he was talking about the opportunity that he is giving Gordon to be back out there on the field, he said, hey, everybody makes mistakes. He just didn't verbalize it very well. Take a listen.
What would be the legal limit? Like in Oklahoma is 0.08 and Ollie was 0.1. So I looked it up and it was based on body weight, not to get into the legal side of it, but I thought really two or three beers or four. I'm not justifying what Ollie did. I'm telling you what decision I made. Well, I thought I've probably done that 1,000 times in my life. And I, you know, it's just fine.
Also clarified on Twitter later in the day, my intended point today at Big 12 Media Days that was that we're all guilty of making bad decisions. It wasn't a reference to something specific. Then why did you get so dang specific, Coach? What are we doing here?
What a head of hair, though. Oh, my God. True. I couldn't stop looking at his hair. I wasn't even paying attention to what he was saying. I was looking at his head of hair. Oh, my God. Look, he's defending his player. I don't think I want him as my defense attorney based on the defense way he decided to go with it. But obviously, you know, he's going to run his program the way he wants to run it. The kid's a great running back. And look, we all have made mistakes in our careers, and I think that's ultimately what he was trying to say, is that I'm not going to punish the kid. Look, why not suspend him for South Dakota State? I mean, you know, he's going to miss the South Dakota State game, right? Or the Tulsa game, or, you know, so I think to me, this is about his program, and he's defending his player, and he's defending his best player. Now, here's what really becomes interesting, is if another player has this situation and he doesn't handle it the same way, then he loses his team.
It was just interesting because I felt like listening to some of the comments from Ollie Gordon specifically, he was very remorseful. He handled himself great. That Gundy made that comment after we just saw in Hard Knocks how a PR person talks to a head coach before you go out there on the podium, before you're talking to media, how to handle yourself, how to answer certain questions. I don't think that he said that
comment,
to his PR guy.
Robert Saleh, he doesn't need that.
Was that not such a great reminder that, yes, Robert Saleh has someone like that. I'm not calling for anybody's job, but let's be a little better in that range, no?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our betting tools and content also available at VSiN.com. We have best bets from all of our VSiN show hosts and guests each and every day, updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including by our own Michael Lombardi doing regular columns, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides like our new NFL betting guide out now. The college football guide will be here before you know it. If you haven't checked out VSiN.com yet, what are you doing? It's your one-stop shop for all things sports betting. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we welcome in now the man who runs all things VSiN.com, also putting together both the NFL and the college football betting guides. Adam Burke, managing editor at VSiN.com, joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line like he does each and every week. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. And speaking of the college football betting guide, which I know you guys are going to be very hard at work at, Media Day's underway. It's talking season. And we played the clip right before the break of Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State and a certain decision that he made as he was talking about his star running back, Ollie Gordon, not missing any time this coming year with the suspension. What did you make of that? And honestly, what do you think about Oklahoma State this year, a top three favorite in the Big 12?
Yeah, so, I mean, look, I think, first of all, it's one of those situations where he was trying to stick up for a player who he probably knows, you know, inside and out, and certainly expects him to be a guy who's going to learn from this mistake. That being said, I mean, I don't think that he said the right thing. I don't think he said what he should have said, and he probably should have expected that question to come and had gotten the university, somebody in the PR department to come up with something better to say. But, you know, he was sticking up for a player. I mean, that's what coaches are going to do, especially because – you know, the transfer portal and all that. I mean, you have to worry about holding on to your recruits. So not really the right way to put what he said, but I guess you can understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think he's, you know, sticking up for his guy, and he wants to, you know, I mean, he knows what he means to his team and all those things. How about the Big 12? Have you done much work on the Big 12, and who do you like to win? I know Stormy and I have talked about Utah entering the Big 12 being a huge difference. Have you done much work on the Big 12?
No, the Big 12 is not really a conference I've looked into too much up to this point. I'm actually going through right now, putting together my power ratings and working on all the different things that I have to do in the lead up to the season. But I do think it will be really, really interesting to look at this conference as we go throughout the course of the year, because you have some new teams here in this conference, and you're going to have some teams playing some road games in elevation that typically aren't used to doing it. We know defense isn't really a calling card in this conference, so teams that are a little bit depth shy on the defensive side that have to go and play in Boulder, play in Salt Lake City, play in Tucson, you know, those may be some difficult games for them in the second half. So those are things that'll definitely factor into the equation for my handicapping.
Yeah, and Adam, when you co-hosted the show with me last week, we talked a lot about that with Utah, and specifically the home field advantage that they've had at Rice-Eccles Stadium over the last handful of years. They sit here a plus 320 favorite in the Big 12, followed by Kansas State plus 380. And the only reason I asked about Oklahoma State specifically, plus 750, they're a team that really catapulted themselves to the Big 12 title game last year. They're one of the top two teams in all of college football returning production, led by Ollie Gordon, who we were just talking about, the top running back in the sport. We'll talk a little bit more Big 12 later on. But for now, as we shift gears to the NFL and the NFL betting guide that is out now, last week when we were on the show, we talked a lot about awards markets, but you also did a handful of write-outs in a number of divisions here, the NFC West, the AFC North, and the NFC North as well. As you went through those divisions, was there one favorite bet that really stood out to you going through?
Yeah, shout out to my guy Mike Somich, who put together the NFC West for us, and we got a lot of good production out of everybody in that NFL betting guide here this season. I'm expecting the same in terms of the college football betting guide as well. As far as, you know, my thoughts on the NFC West, I actually like the Rams in this division. I mean, I know that a lot of people like the 49ers, understandably so. They've got a ton of talent. They bring back a lot of the same personnel that they had last season from the Super Bowl runner-up. But, you know, for the Rams here, I mean, I really like Jonah Jackson. I think he's a nice upgrade on the offensive line. They rebuilt the secondary, getting Tre'Davious White. They signed Darius Williams as well. You know, I think corner was a bit of a problem area for them last year, and I think they've addressed it. The other thing is, I mean, when you've got Cooper Kupp and you've got Puka Nacua and you've got Kyren Williams, you got the makings of a really, really good offense, especially at the skill positions. But we know Matthew Stafford is getting older, getting a little bit longer in the tooth. The back's been a bit of an issue here at times. I really like the fact that they brought in Jimmy Garoppolo to be a guy to kind of give them a little bit of a safety net there if Stafford does miss any time, as opposed to running out John Wolford or some of the other guys that they have. So I think this Rams team is deeper. I think this Rams team is better. I think they really found something on offense last year with Kyren Williams' emergence. So I think they are very live to win the division. That being said, I wouldn't bet it now because they're on the road at Detroit in week one, a Lions team that I really love, and the 49ers host the Jets. I think we see a situation where the 49ers are 1-0, the Rams are 0-1. You'll get better than that plus 330 price that's out there now.
Yeah, and then I also think if you wait a little bit, we'll know about Stafford's health, because we're always concerned about his elbow, and we'll also know about his contract because he wants to redo his deal, and we'll see how they handle that. So I think you're smart to play, to wait a little bit. You know, even if they beat Detroit in the opener and San Francisco beats the Jets, the number will still be in your favor. How about in the AFC North? What did you like there?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Michael. I don't know if I like anything from a betting standpoint here in this division. I mean, you know, obviously the Bengals hinge on Joe Burrow. You know, Baltimore is going to be really, really good again. They have some retooling to do on the defensive side, losing McDonald and, of course, losing a guy like Patrick Queen. But I think Zach Orr is a rising star in the coaching world, and I think he'll be just fine as the defensive coordinator there. For the Browns, I mean, maybe the best roster in the NFL outside of the quarterback position, but it turns out the quarterback position is pretty important. So I don't know what Deshaun Watson is going to be for this team. And Pittsburgh, I want to pick against because their schedule is absolutely miserable, particularly after the bye week when they play all six AFC North games. They play Washington, they play Philadelphia, they play Kansas City. It's a really tough 9-week stretch for them after the bye. But Mike Tomlin is the best in the business at getting the most out of his team. This offense should be dramatically improved with Art Smith as the OC. And I think Justin Fields ultimately starts for this team. And I think he fits really well in the Art Smith offense. So honestly, I don't know if there's a bet that I could make here in this division. I think Baltimore, until proven otherwise, is the top dog to me. But all three of the other teams, I mean, you could make compelling cases for. I think Pittsburgh, obviously, you know, the long shot here because of that schedule.
Adam, when you say you think Justin Fields ultimately starts, do you mean later on in the season, or at what point do you think that'll occur?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they kind of put themselves into a corner here by sort of saying it was Russ's team out of the gate. I don't think that that's the right move for them. But I mean, Russ is, you know, a well-respected veteran, and, you know, Justin Fields is a guy that people find a lot of flaws in his game. Understandably so. I still think he's a great fit with Arthur Smith and the backs that they have here. But I think Russ starts the season. I think they quickly find out that they're better off letting Fields use his legs in this type of offensive format.
You know, and also I like what you were talking about on Follow the Money the other day. Share with our audience your survivor teams to pick against. I kind of like this a lot.
Yeah, so look, I mean, I think that, you know, when it comes to survivor, you want to isolate teams you can pick on, you know, because then you're not in a position where you have to repeat teams, right? I mean, unless it's a division team, you know, a team's only going to play the Patriots once, for example, or only going to play the Panthers once. So it's one of those things where, you know, I think I'm trying to isolate teams that I want to pick on early on in the season here. I think Denver could be one as well, as Bo Nix kind of transitions into leading that Sean Payton offense. But I think you pick on the Panthers. I think you pick on the Patriots. I think there are some other teams you can pick on here as well and you know, try to bank some wins early on in the year. The other thing that's really challenging is, you know, you want to make sure you have some good teams at the end of the year, right? You don't want to have to be playing for, you know, millions of dollars or thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars, however big your pool is, taking teams that are, you know, going to finish 7-10 or 8-9 when all is said and done, when you get into weeks 14, 15, 16, stuff like that. So I think it's really important to plot out the season, kind of have a blueprint so that you know when you'll be able to hold some teams back and when you may have to just go ahead and fire with a team.
And if there's somebody who you want to take advice from in this area, it's Adam Burke. Adam and his partner got extremely deep into the season last year. What week did you ultimately get through?
I don't remember what week it was, but I know we were the final 15 standing in last year's Circa Survivor. And we were able to you know, monetize our position by getting as deep into it as we did. But, you know, we also painted ourselves into a corner where for that Christmas game, all we had was I believe, San Francisco. And, you know, Brock Purdy played the worst game of his life, basically, in that game against the Ravens. So we would have lost that week anyway because we didn't have Philadelphia available as like a 900-point favorite against the Giants. So that was a learning experience for us, was to make sure that we do manage the season properly. And particularly, if you're in a survivor contest with those holiday weeks, you really have to plan accordingly for those.
No question about it. Adam, this was awesome. Thank you so much for your time, pal.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's Adam Burke, everybody. Adam. Yep, follow him on X at Skating Tripods. Does a great job managing all things at VSiN.com, putting together all of these guides. A lot of hard work in that. But Michael, like you're saying, Survivor's so interesting. And he's got a write-up on VSiN.com already, kind of breaking down the approach to Survivor, but he'll be following it throughout the entire season. And he mentioned being able to monetize the ticket. That's a big part of it too when you get deep.
No question. You've got to be able to plan it out and monetize the ticket as you go forward. I mean, he got the final 15. That's impressive, Stormy.
Unbelievable. Whoa,
I think it's so hard.
It is. It looks so easy on the surface. You just got to pick a winner each week. Yeah, it is not that simple at all. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we will dive deeper into the Big 12. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic is going to join us coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. This guide is jam-packed with everything you need to know ahead of the NFL season, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections for each. We've got new quarterback and new head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus, of course, futures bets from our VSiN experts for all the awards markets like MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or you're just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed wagering this football season. Head to vsin.com/guide to get your copy today. That's vsin.com/guide. So the NFL guide is out now. The college football betting guide will be out in short order alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Let's get into a little more college football talk as we welcome into the show Stuart Mandel, editor-in-chief of the Athletic College Football section. He's at Allegiant Stadium here in Vegas right now covering all things Big 12 media days. And Stuart, priority one here before we get into some football stuff. How are you handling the heat? Are you okay?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Stormy, for making it 117 degrees yesterday. That's the hottest I've ever felt in my life. But it was for like 2 minutes waiting for an Uber.
Okay. Well, glad that you were able to get into the building, Allegiant Stadium, well air-conditioned, and that's what's important here. But now we're going to what Brett Yormark has called the deepest league in America, a new-look Big 12, 16 teams. What are some of your early takeaways from seeing all of these new squads in action out here?
I mean, first of all, it's a little surreal to see everybody from BYU to UCF to Arizona State at Big 12 Media Days. I think that's going to take some getting used to. But, you know, I think what he said about it being the deepest conference, that may be true just because, I believe there are about eight teams, so half the league, that have a realistic chance to win it, which is very unusual for a conference. They don't have as many bottom feeders as maybe some other leagues do. But the question is, are any of these teams, you know, going to put together the kind of season where they can contend for, you know, at least one's going to go to the playoff, but they can they get in the playoff and win some games?
Bruce, how about Utah? I mean, to me, when I watch Utah's team play with Fred Whittingham as the head coach, I kind of get the sense that, or Kyle, I knew Fred too, but I get the sense that they're a Big Ten team. They're going to play in the Big 12, but they're almost like they're physical. Cam Rising coming back, the team's loaded. Are they a kind of a sleeper in the Big 12 this year?
I think they're probably the favorite, and you know they come in, you know, having won the Pac-12 twice in a row before last season. They have a now seventh-year quarterback in Cam Rising, who was hurt last year, but before that, led them to those two Pac-12 championships. And you're right about the style of play. And they really, part of the reason they were so successful in the Pac-12 is they were the rare team that did run it down your throat. The interesting thing is that the Big 12, in my opinion, has shifted to more of that after years of being known as the pass it 50 times a game conference. So they're not the only ones here that'll play that style of football, but they're definitely the most established. I mean, he's been, Kyle Whittingham's been there for 20 years at this point. You know what you're going to get from a Utah football team.
Yeah, and a lot of those players that won back-to-back Pac-12 champions back on the roster in addition to Cam Rising and Brant Keithy, who are so big. Utah, a +320 favorite. Was very surprised to see their win total only at 9.5. It's very hard to imagine there being, if this team stays healthy, more losses than that. Kansas State, second shot on the board, followed by Oklahoma State. And I know Mike Gundy had some interesting comments as it pertains to Ollie Gordon and not having a suspension there. You talked to him a little bit after some of those comments went viral. What did he say to you?
I mean, if you saw the comment that went viral, basically he decided not to suspend his star running back who, was arrested for DUI. And that comment definitely made some waves that he said on ESPNU because it made it seem like he was saying he's had a few drinks and driven, in his words, 1,000 times. He backtracked on that when I talked to him later and said, oh, I wasn't referring specifically to that. Just, you know, bad decisions. We all make bad decisions. It's one of those things, Stormy, that will be a story for 24 hours. And then by the time the season gets here, which, by the way, is still a little bit of ways away, people really aren't going to be talking about it. I mean, I think the story with Oklahoma State is not only is he back, Alan Bowman, who has also been in college football forever, the quarterback, the whole offensive line might be the most experienced offensive line in the country. It's a team that probably wasn't as good as it looked last year when they won 10 games and made it to the Big 12 championship. But this is a more experienced team that, on paper at least, should be even better than they were last season. And that puts them in a shot to get back to the title game.
Let's shift to the ACC. Florida State was great last year. Clemson had the down year. Where do you see Clemson? I know that Dabo doesn't really want to take part in the transfer portal here. Where do you see them, and can they rebound to where they've been in years past?
I mean, I think that not signing any transfers year after year is really hurting them because the teams they play against are going out and upgrading through the portal. They went 4-4 in the ACC last year, and they're bringing the same exact team back. So, I mean, I think they're still recruiting at a high level out of high school. They still have some high-end talent there that'll go to the NFL. And so, you know, with Florida State kind of rebuilding after losing everybody from last season, there's an opportunity there. But let's not think, you know, let's not pretend this is the Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne era at Clemson. You know, this is a team that realistically is top, you know, top 20. It's certainly not top four.
That season opener at Georgia, I'm sure, will be very fun for all involved. Georgia, by the way, favorite to win a national championship this year, favorite in the SEC. As we talk about Utah, a new addition to the Big 12 being a favorite, Texas, as they move on from the Big 12 to the SEC, the second shortest shot in that conference. Could we really have a world this year where two teams entering new leagues have potential to win those leagues right away?
Yeah, I mean, Texas is loaded, right? There's no other way to put it. Now, they're taking a big step up in competition. The conference they won last year to make it into the playoffs was not what they're going to be facing in the SEC this year, where they're going to play Georgia in the regular season, for one thing. But I think people would consider it a disappointment if they may take a little step back on the record. But if they don't make the playoffs, that would be considered a big disappointment because there's so much buzz and momentum around where Texas football is going under Sark.
Bruce, how about Ohio State? Talk about momentum and expectations. I mean, is this have to beat Michigan year for Ryan Day? Or do you think that even if he loses to Michigan and has a great year and gets into the tournament, he can still save his job?
I would not want to lose to Michigan again if I were Ryan Day, because they've invested so much, literally invested money so much in this team and bringing in. First of all, they had to, you know, their collective had to pay a lot of money to keep a bunch of these guys who could have easily gone to the NFL to come back for another year. And then they go out and get transfers like Caleb Downs, who, you know, is an All-American caliber safety from Alabama. Quinshon Judkins, who ran for a ton of yards at Ole Miss. So this roster is national championship expectations. Now, do they have to win the national championship for it to be considered a success? I don't think so. But they certainly got to beat Michigan. And, you know, I think their fans would be very disappointed if they don't have a, you know, a team that's playing on the last night of the season.
College football editor-in-chief of The Athletic, Stuart Mandel, joining us here on the Lombardi Line. And, I mean, with that, how we were talking about new teams and new leagues potentially winning, Oregon obviously is going to be another team that's contending in the Big Ten here, could give Ohio State a run for their money. How do you feel that they're going to fit in this conference moving on from the Pac-12?
I mean, I think of the four West Coast schools playing in there, they're definitely in the best position to compete right away. Dan Lanning has taken the recruiting there to a whole other level. They've killed it in the portal. You know, to get Dylan Gabriel to come, you know, you lose a quarterback like Bo Nix, you would worry they take a step back, but they just turn around and go get Dylan Gabriel, who was a 2-year, you know, standout quarterback at Oklahoma and UCF before that. So, as I look at the Big Ten, obviously we know what we got in Ohio State. Michigan is huge turnover from, you know, not just Harbaugh, but the roster. They had so many guys drafted. Penn State could be very good, but still has a lot of questions. Like, there's no reason Oregon can't come in and reach the Big Ten title game in their first season.
Stuart, before we let you go, what's the chaos around Deion today at Media Day?
Well, so far, I've only seen him kind of walk across the field with his entourage, but literally in 6 minutes, we're going to get his press conference, and I'm sure he's going to say some things that'll catch attention because that's what he does.
I need a "Do you believe now?" on the podium. That's what I need. That's what'll get me going.
I think we're going to get that because the players are all walking around with backpacks that say "believe."
Oh, of course we do. Awesome stuff, Stuart. We so appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Stuart. Guys.
Don't work too hard and stay cool while you are here in Vegas, because it is a scorcher out there each and every day. Michael, I'm just still envious that you get the beautiful Ocean City weather every day. I know you have a lot of tourists, but we have that too. We have tourists and heat.
Yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. But we also have humidity, which you don't get there. I know it's hot. I hate when people say, well, there's no humidity in Vegas. Hot is hot. I don't care what they tell me, right?
No question about it. I am also going to head over to Allegiant Stadium a little bit later on today. Check out a little bit of the Big 12 Media Day action. Catch up with a couple coaches if I can. I think I'm going to cover a good bit of Big 12 with ESPN this year. Also, Mountain West Media Day is going on behind us. I would say this might be the coolest set of all college football Media Days that are going to happen this year. Right at the sports book here at Circa. I'll have to send Elliot a clip to throw up. It is awesome. We'll be right back, resetting for hour two of the Lombardi Line after a quick timeout. Don't go anywhere.